We're thankful to have those of you who are visiting with us. We're always glad to have you. We hope that you are aware of this and will stay around after we're dismissed and get to know us and let us get to know you a bit better. We're especially glad, I'll have to say, to have Sue Gates back with us from New Zealand. Sue plotted against Neil. She said, I hope he's teaching this morning. I'm just going to stand there or sit there and see if he recognizes me. She said, I bet he will. Sure enough, he did. And that was no surprise. Is that rain out there we're hearing? Isn't it great to be in here together where it's good and warm and dry? And we can encourage each other and be together a bit. I love for it to rain after we get in here. I don't like the rain coming in, but after we get here, let the bottom fall out. You know, it doesn't matter. If we're all here together, it's good. We're glad for Carl and Johnny Beavers and their family to be with us to place membership. They're sitting right on the very back seat today. They didn't want to be presumptuous. Now, we want you to go back there and meet them after we're dismissed. And most of you, a lot of you know them, but be sure to get to know these people. And all of the others who 2 weeks ago stood up and told who they are, gave us their names and all, be on the lookout for these people now because they need to be able to find a niche and to fit in. 2 weeks ago, we were looking at one of the aspects or one of the tendencies of a growing church. We found out that one of the tendencies is depersonalization, where people kind of just tend to become a number or a figure. But not really having any personality and not really feeling a part. And we noticed two things that would help generally. And that is, one, give attention to our assemblies. Be warm and outgoing and be looking for people who need to be spoken to. Don't go around looking for someone to speak to you. So give attention to our assemblies. Be responsible. And then give attention to our home. Be hospitable. Be warm and outgoing. Include other people around your table. This is something that's vital to a church maintaining personal identity, with every individual person feeling like he had a place or has a place in that body. Today, I want to notice with you a second trend. And we'll wrap up the year together with this observation or these observations this morning. And then tonight, we're going to notice one final observation that really needs to be nailed down as we bring this year to a close. But today, this morning, a second trend of a growing large congregation is reflected in an all-too-prevalent condition that exists among all-too-many churches. And that is that in many times and many places, the church is a great big sleeping giant. And much of its activity consists simply of a spasmodic, sporadic reflex action of its little finger. It may twitch here and twitch there. It is often fed a deficient diet, producing anemia. It often gets most of its exercise going to and from the table. And sometimes we go to sleep while we're at the table. 1 Corinthians was a letter written to a people who, for one reason or other, had found themselves in the position of being sickly, weakly, and some of them had actually died. The expression is that some of you are asleep or have gone to sleep. It was probably figurative and meant that there were those Christians who had actually lost their spiritual life because of a failure in one area or the other. All of the things that I've just mentioned, the sporadic, spasmodic action or activity, the deficiency of diet, the lack of eating, the tendency perhaps to die and to dwindle away as Christians, all of these are symptoms of this second tendency of a large church. I'm not sure whether they are causes or effects of this second tendency, and that is of lost manpower. Lost manpower. Let me define the term you're familiar with it, probably. I don't have to define it, but it's any condition in the life of a Christian in which his talent is not utilized to the glory of God. That's lost manpower. Now, in the U.S. government, in our economy, I believe that we're in the mess we're in today, at least for one reason, and that being the fact that we have not utilized to the fullest or even to an acceptable extent the great resource of manpower that we have in the American people. There are a lot of people who are not working. But that's not really maybe where the biggest problem lies. Those who are working are not putting out, and their productivity is so limited that we actually are not competitive today in the world economic market. But I'm not here to talk on economics. I'm here to use that simply as a comparison to say that the same thing is true in the church. There are a lot of people who, because of just simply the fact that they died off, are not being utilized. That's not really the problem with the church, though, today. It's a problem as far as those people are concerned. But one of our biggest problems is that we, who are still making the motions of life and who many times are alive, we're not being utilized. Our talents are not actually being put to work. How many of you today feel like your talents are not really being used? I don't want you to raise your hand necessarily. I see some of you did raise your hand. That you don't really feel like you found your place. This congregation is large enough that it's easy to get lost. And it's easy for us to lose out on all the talents that you possess. And I'm sure if you were to call for a roll call and ask how many of you feel this about yourself, that your talent is not being utilized, I suspect a great number of us would hold up our hands. Do you realize the seriousness of this diagnosis? In Matthew, the 25th chapter, Jesus told the parable of the one talent man. Now, the parable is not so much emphasizing the one talentness of this man as it is emphasizing the fact that the man was afraid and that he buried his talent. That's where the lesson is. Because there are a lot of five talent people who are burying their talents. And there are a lot of five and two and one talent people who, because of some circumstance in the congregation where they are, have never actually had their talents employed to the glory of God. You don't have to be what you might call just a poor old, common, everyday one-talent man to bury your talent. You can be one of the five or one of the two-talent people and bury it. Jesus, though, condemns the condition and simply says, point blank, take this person, take the talent away from him, give it to the one that has the ten, and then take this unprofitable servant and throw him away, throw him out into the darkness. That's how serious it is to not find where our talents fit in. Well, the condition concerns the elders of this congregation. I suppose that as much as any other problem or as much as any other condition in the church, this one occupies as much time of the elders' thinking of any other as any other one does. Where do we put the people? Where can we put them to work? How can we utilize their talents? How can we garner the great storehouse of wealth that exists in the members of this body? Undoubtedly, this congregation has more tapped and untapped resources of power and strength and ability and talent than any congregation I've ever known. Bar none. We've got it. It concerns me as well as the elders. I tell you, though, this one concerns us all for this simple reason. More so than just you're being fed. Because of this reason, the elders are going to see that you're fed. They're going to see to it that you're fed a well-balanced diet. Every year, they come around, we sit around and talk about what you need. Right? You're also going to see that you get some association with somebody who's a Christian. You're not going to, if you live, you're not going to just be a hermit. You're going to find somebody, if you just have to reduce it to hobnobbing and becoming a tick, you're going to find somebody to be with. But what do you do with this feeling and the fact of uselessness? This feeling, this dread feeling of, and this frustration, is so debilitating. It's so frustrating that you feel like your talents are not being used. Time is wasting. You're getting older.
And I'm just not having the input that I need. I'm not getting an opportunity to do what I ought to do. Time is going by, it's passing me by, and I'm not being used, is an expression that many times men use. I don't know whether women ever use that expression or not. Bless their hearts, many times they're so busy, they don't have time to realize whether they're being used or not. But sometimes men, we men, have a tendency to be poor me-ish. And I'm not being used. Well, what does this have to do with lost manpower? What is all this thing? Just think of this. That we've got to figure out where we fit in. We've got to figure out what our talent is and then get busy using it. But I want to ask a question. As we talk about lost manpower debilitating and thus frustrating us, it does this to us personally, and it produces in an atmosphere in our own thinking that causes us to be unproductive. But then you add all that together, and you get a congregation of people that is unproductive and is being debilitated, and we're not really being useful, if that's the case. Now, what causes it? Why is it like that? Why does church growth accelerate it? Do you know why it is? As we look, and the Carl Beavers family, they've come in now. It's another family. There have been others, 8 or 10 last Sunday, the Sunday before, who've placed membership with us. Others of you have moved in. Why is the coming of all these people, why is it that kind of a situation that accelerates this loss of manpower? I'm going to give you an answer that is totally wrong. I'm going to tell you something that really is irrelevant to the issue. But I'm going to answer it in the light in which I think many times the church as a whole usually thinks. And here it is. Here's the question. Why does church growth accelerate the loss of manpower? Answer? Well, because the necessary functions of the assembly can only be performed by a certain few. You know, there are just so many songs that can be led, and just so many prayers that can be led, and just so many sermons that can be preached, and just so many men are needed here at the table. After all, that's answer number one. It's wrong. Well, isn't that right? So, well, that's right, but it's wrong. And then the other is what you might call just simple respectability. In a congregation that grows large, if you're not careful, they'll get plumb downright respectable. And they'll want those who have the most talent or the most exposure or at least the most experience, they'll want them to do all of the public functioning and all because it looks better and it's said better. You know what we can do? In fact, one brother told me recently that the church actually where he preaches, he's a good friend of mine, he said they actually pay him to not hold meetings. Now, brethren, can you imagine? Now, that's pay him to not hold meetings. You know why? Because they want to make sure that there's somebody in the pulpit that's going to do the job that ought to be done. And they think he can do it, so they pay him not to go out of town. I'll have to confess that I think my brethren pay me to get me out of town. And I know that about once a year, you need to. Or at least more times than that, maybe. But you know, both of these answers are not right. They're just not right. The fact that one just simply can do so much, or that there's just only so much that has to be done and all, and that respectability and all, still, it misses something. Both of these answers are based upon three false premises. They're based upon three false concepts. I'm going to mention them very briefly this morning, but I want you to understand them. Because as we come to the end of this year, and as we go into the next year, I'm going to be giving all that I can to correcting these three false concepts among this congregation and as many congregations as I can find. Concept number one that's wrong, and that is that the main activity of the church takes place during its assemblies. That's wrong. That is one of the most wrong concepts the church it possesses today. That the main activity of the church is during the assembly. Well, I'll tell you what, if it is, then the increase of size and the growth of the congregation does tend towards loss of manpower because there are just so many that can serve in that capacity. And this congregation is plagued with that predicament because, I'll tell you what, there are some of you men here who did not serve in a public way all last year, this year, this whole past year. You've not served publicly. And what about your poor wives? They never get to do anything. If the main activity of the church takes place during the assembly, then we're in trouble because we never will get everybody involved in a congregation that's this large. But now, if you doubt that most congregations are like this, if you doubt that even smaller congregations function from this false premise that the main activity of the church takes place during the services, you go in and look at their men's training classes and find out what they're training them to do. In most congregations, if they have a men's training class, those congregations are training those men to lead in prayer, to read announcements, to lead singing, to do something about waiting on the table, and to do whatever the public body or the public assembly of the body requires in a congregated worship service. And that is about the extent of it. Well, is that right or wrong? It's dead wrong. But because of the fact that we have been a worship-oriented people, in the sense of a didactic-oriented people, we've been a people who have placed much emphasis upon the assembly and upon getting everything just like it ought to be in the assembly, and it ought to be done right. But brethren, whenever the assembly becomes the end rather than the means, then we've got trouble on our hands. And we've been doing that for 150 years, and whatever's been done, the church is dying. Now listen. In reality, the church ought to be like an old-timey iron. These assemblies ought to be like an old-timey iron. Here we are, we're being put on the stove. Now, where you are, you're being sat on the stove this morning. And I'm applying the heat. And that's exactly what happens when you come. I apply the heat, the elders apply the heat, and we're all here getting fired up. But you know, an iron isn't any good until it gets what we call flat to the board. Did you know where that expression came from? Flat to the board. How are you doing? I'm flat to the board. What do you mean? Well, in New Zealand, they say I'm flat out. It's the same thing. It means that I've finally gotten it off the old stove that's getting it heated, and now I'm flat to the board doing what's necessary, doing what the iron was designed to do. And you know, Christianity is like that. The assembly won't be worth one thing to you and me unless we finally get the iron off the stove and put it flat to the board, ironing out the wrinkles that life possesses out there 7 days a week. That's what the purpose of the assembly is. Let me read something here. A man by the name of Hollis Green wrote a book entitled Why Churches Die. Listen to this statement. The church building is no doubt vital to Christianity's survival in the 20th century. But it is not a New Testament concept at all. Have mercy. Do you know that the concept of a church building is not even a New Testament concept? That's right. It is probably the greatest single hindrance to world evangelism. Not because the church buildings hinder, but because it fences in the program of evangelism and enables individual Christians to shirk from responsibility without being aware of the sin of omission. It places too much responsibility on the professional clergy and fails to advance the priesthood of all believers. This is not to say that the church building is not good. It helps in the winter and in the summer and on rainy days. By the way, two of those hit us right today. I'd hate to meet out under a tree today. It also helps keep the people together so they may be trained and equipped for Christian service. And this is its purpose, and it must be kept in that perspective. But how many times have we gotten to the place where our concept of the assembly is that's the end in view. That's what we're here for, is to assemble. That's not true. Other things are involved. Okay, you say, I'm convinced. Put me to work. Put me into the program. And that's an indication of the second misunderstanding. The first misunderstanding is that the main activity of the church is taking place during the assembly. The second misunderstanding or false concept is that everything has to be organized in order to function. You say, I'm convinced that it's not all done in here. I get that. Okay, I'm ready to go now. Plug me into a program. Program men. Put me to work. Well, the idea that you have to be assigned something or not function is a misconception of the priesthood of all believers, and it is an indication of immaturity. Do you know which children in your family don't function unless you tell them what to do? Well, they're the ones that are the immature ones. Now, there are going to be always people like that in the church who haven't developed in their maturity the place that they can function without somebody telling them what to do. But I guarantee you, there's no reason to be ashamed if that's the condition that you're in. Fine. Go ahead and tell the elders, look, I'm not mature enough that I can see opportunities. Put me to doing something, and they'll put you to work. Brethren, if the whole congregation is in such a state of immaturity that the only way we can function as a body of people is through some programmed work by which everybody is put into a program, then I suspect that we're not maturing like we ought to mature. And I suspect that we have a whole congregation, a whole body, a whole family full of immature children. Now, I know whenever children get to the place where they are maturing, you don't have to tell them to do this and tell them to do that and keep on telling them, and you go do this and make up your bed and clean up. They'll do it. And I'll say that out of the five children we've got one mature one. The other four, when it comes to making up beds and doing things like that, you know, they're not all that mature. I wonder how many mature Christians we've got in this congregation. There's a lot of going on that we don't even know about that's being done by mature people who aren't waiting around on the elders to set them something to do. And I don't know what's going on. I tell people this is the most unorganized church I've ever seen in my life. People are doing things and I don't know what's going on. The elders don't know what's going on. It's just going on, going on, going on. That's done by people who are mature. I'll tell you what, the ones, and don't feel embarrassed or ashamed if you're in this condition, the ones who are sitting around doing nothing and are complaining and have turned in on yourself because nobody has told me or given me anything to do, you're immature. You're immature. Now don't go away mad, because I tell you what, I'd rather be immature than dead. No. Just be immature. Look, say, I just don't know how to go about it. Will you put me to work? Yeah, we'll put you to work. The elders will tell you. We'll do it. But I'll tell you, we need not depend on that. That's not where real activity, that's not where the real work of the church is to be accomplished. Not in a programmed way. It had better grow and develop into a spontaneous, self-starting process by which we go out and just simply be. And we do what God wants us to do because we've grown up in Him and are able to function as grown people. In Acts 8, chapter and verse 4, when the church was scattered abroad preaching the word, who programmed them to do that? Who assigned them to do that? Well, you say the Lord did. He sent a persecution and drove them out. Well, that's right. He did that because they were kind of in a state of immaturity. They were standing around there. They were so glad to be together, they had forgotten about the rest of the world. And the Lord sent a persecution and drove them out all over that country, and they went out preaching. When Dorcas was buried, when she died, and the widows and all were gathered about her in Acts the 9th chapter, and about verse 29, they were gathering around, and when Peter got there, they'd called him up there to see if he couldn't do something. He raised the woman from the dead. But in the meantime, they were showing Peter and the others all the things that Dorcas had made for them. Showing her the coats and the sweaters, you know, and the dresses that she had made. She kept sewing for these widows and orphans and just kept herself busy. Well, who programmed her to do that? What kind of a program was it? I doubt that it was a program. I think she was just doing the will of the Lord as a matured Christian. Well, what about when needs aren't fulfilled? Then an appointment needs to be made. In Acts the 6th chapter, Neil talked about it all this morning. Neil, I thought you were going to get the sermon. But that's exactly what happened. The need there wasn't being met, and so some assignments did need to be made. And so people were programmed. They appointed 7 people to take care of the needs of the Grecian widows, and the need was taken care of. But that was one of the exceptions, not the rule. Let me read you something from our brother James Bales. He wrote an article once and won. He wrote 1,000 articles once, and in one of those, he makes the statement, how much instruction does it take to enable us to realize that we, like the Lord, ought to go about doing good? Go about doing good in your home, as whatever you are, a son or a daughter, a brother, a sister, a husband, or a wife. Go about doing good as you associate with your friends and others. Work as unto the Lord on your job. Be the person in all relationships in life who attracts the attention of those who want truth and goodness. Are there no sick to be visited? Are there no shut-ins to be helped? Are there no overworked mothers who could use a helping hand or a babysitter at times so that they could get out for a while? Are there no friends or others who are going wrong to whom you can speak a word in love, of instruction or exhortation or whatever they need? And you know what? That hits right at here. Is there nothing that I can be doing? Do I have to be assigned? Where are my eyes? Can't I see things that need to be done? I can if I have them open. I can if I have my attention zeroed in on other people and look for their needs rather than be grumbling about my own needs not being met. Well, let me just simply say this, that the second misconception that robs us of manpower that's unbelievable is the fact that we think everything that's done has got to be programmed. It's not true. And if that be true, this congregation will have so much machinery that we can't get off the ground, because the machinery to do 3,500 people and get them all involved in a meaningful work, it's not going to be done. If it can't be done out of simple spontaneity that grows out of a Christian growing up being conscious of the needs of other people, it won't be done. All right, then there's a third misconception, and that is that everybody should do everything. Everybody should do everything. Well, this false concept, when held with that first one, and that is that the assembly is where everything happens, you add to the fact that when some people think that it's in the assembly that everything about Christianity is done, and then you add the second one to that, that everybody has to do everything, and you'll kill the church. Here's why. And the mutual ministry church that grew up some years ago killed itself because it overtalked. Listen, every man in that... Yeah, I say every man, that's probably an overemphasis, an overstatement, but so many people, whenever they think that it's all done right here and that everybody has to have a chance to do everything, you know where about 90% of them are going to finally end up wanting to do something, they're going to want to talk. Now, we're all like that, and forgive me, for I'm here I am doing it, I'm sorry. But listen, in a congregation, there aren't that many mouths that can speak in order to build up the body of Christ. Everybody isn't a mouth. You know that. Well, all right. Everybody has to do everything is a false concept. Romans, the 12th chapter, 1 Corinthians, the 12th chapter, simply lays down the principle that everybody has his own talent. You may not be able to speak. Don't worry about it. Can you listen? If there were no ears, there would be no purpose for a mouth. That's right, because there wouldn't be any place for a person to stand if we didn't have a lot of receptive ears. That's right. But you know what? The converse of that's also true. Just as much as I'm convinced that no congregation has such a liberal supply of adequate mouths that every man in the congregation ought to be turned loose in the pulpit, just as surely as I'm convinced that that's true, I'm also very much convinced that it is very unlikely that a congregation of 3,500 people has only one mouth that can speak effectively. That's right. You say, you're trying to talk yourself out of a job. And the elders may say afterwards, you have already talked yourself out of a job. But brethren, listen, I'm convicted about this. And I keep talking with these brethren. And they want a person in the pulpit who can give continuity to the advice and the instruction given to the students. I know that. And I'm agreed, that's true. There needs to be continuity. But there doesn't need to be monotony. Nor does there need to be created a monolith from one man's personality to where everything that's produced in a congregation in a public way is filtered through his brain. That doesn't need to be. I certainly agree that we ought to have a unified approach to the pulpit, to where there is unity, where there's continuity. That's right. But brethren, there is a wealth of talent in this congregation that the elders could be using and could be applying to our needs, and if they were aware of it and would allow it to be done more freely, they could just say to a brother, you've got something to say on this, why don't you speak to us Sunday? We'll send Brother Woodruff down the road to hold a meeting. You come on, we need to hear what you've got to say. And another brother over here, he's been studying on another subject, and the elders can say, you've been studying on this, and this could all be done during the summertime or during these times when the kids aren't here. They wouldn't have to know anything about it. We could do it behind their back and they'd never guess. Except they'd get an indication. When they came back, they would see a vitality and a life in the body that they had not noticed before. I'm convinced that everybody should not do everything. And yet I'm also convicted of the fact that there are more people than one in a body who have something that has to be said and can be a benefit to the church. But that's really the backwards way. What I'm simply saying is, because of the fact that a lot of preachers and a lot of people think that everybody's got to do everything, here's three things that have happened. Number one, there are a lot of overburdened people. Because there are some people who by nature are going to be more visible and more accessible and more ready than other people. Consequently, whenever a job comes up, it's laid on those people. And they absolutely are snowed under. That's problem number one. Secondly, there's a group of people who are loaded with guilt because they've been made to feel guilty for not doing everything in the church. And they've had the audacity to say, well, now, wait a minute, that's not my talent. My gift is over here, and I'm taking care of this. Many times they're made to feel guilty. But the majority of us just sit confused, not knowing, by the way, that all of us have a gift, or each of us has a gift, and that we can look for that gift and put it to work, and the Lord will bless us, and as a whole body, here's a toe, and there's a foot, and there's a mouth, and there's an ear, and here's an arm, and there's an elbow, and there's a knee, and there's a brain, and there's a stomach, and here we go. And the whole body then being brought together in that kind of a function will function. Now, these three false concepts will just about wrap it up. If we're suffering from lost manpower, it'll either be because we, first of all, think that the main activity of the church takes place during the assembly, and that the activities during the week must be organized, and that thirdly, everybody ought to be doing everything. If you get all three of those false concepts in a congregation, I guarantee you, it'll die. And you'll have to prop it up professionally. You'll have to prop it up through organization. You'll have to prop it up in a way that's just not good. Well, how can we facilitate it? We'll need to talk about that some other time. Our time has passed. I want you to look, though, over at chapter of 1 Timothy. And I really wanted you to look at 1 Timothy 2. And you may say, you know, I'm not really being utilized. 2 Timothy chapter 2 it is. Verses 20 through 22. You say you're not being utilized. You're not being used. Listen to this again now. I've read it recently. 2 Timothy 2:20. In a great house, there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and earthenware. Some for noble use, some for ignoble. If anyone purifies himself from what is ignoble, then he will be a vessel for noble use, consecrated and useful to the master of the house, ready for any good work. So shun youthful passions and aim at righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call upon the Lord from a pure heart. You say, I'm not being used in a meaningful way. Shun youthful passions, aim at righteousness, faith, and love, and cleanse yourself from what's ignoble. And Paul told Timothy, you'll be then a vessel ready for every good use. You'll be ready for noble use. All right. I'm convinced that if we will, as the leaders of this congregation, will serve as player coaches, where we're in there with the congregation and we're pulling them into the action as far as the leadership, as far as whatever is needed. We're out there doing it. We're pulling them into it. If we'll serve as player coaches and fulfill the requirement laid down in Ephesians, the 4th chapter, that we are to train the body itself to do ministry, then we'll be well on our way to becoming a congregation that's growing without being one that is suffering from a loss of manpower. All right, we'll be working off of these thoughts during the new year, this next semester. We're going to be using this as a springboard. I needed to clear up those thoughts and get them before us today. You may be here today, and perhaps as a Christian, and you've never really felt like you were a part or never did feel like you fit in. Begin being conscious of other people and their needs and start serving them. But you may want to place membership, or you may never even have done that. If you wish to, we want to give you that opportunity, and we're going to urge you to do it right now, along with anyone who feels they need to respond, either to obey the gospel or ask for the prayers of the church or whatever may be your need right now, we're going to urge you to do it while we stand and sing.